Hi guys and girls, and thanks for joining us on another Team LRF podcast. And today I'm joined by a friend of mine, Corey Fieldhouse. Corey, how are you doing?
What's happening, big dog? You all right?
Yeah, good man. You good, bro?
Very good. Alive and kicking.
Good to hear. Yeah, good to hear. So obviously we've got some really good guests on this podcast, you know, Samson, and we've had a few other really good guests over the past, you know, people who have won the Olympia, David Henry. But I think you eclipse them all, to be honest.
Save the best or last. This will be the last podcast you ever see on Team LRF, guys. Best or last.
Ever. This will be the last one ever because we want to finish on a high. No, all jokes aside. But how's things, man? Obviously, you've got the gym opening up as well. Well, it's opened up, hasn't it? So
yes.
A little private facility for yourself and your clients, the training. Obviously, seeing you had a few issues with your health as well. So probably touch upon that and see how everything is. But, how's things been since the Arnold's back in September?
Do you know what? It's been a whirlwind. I think most importantly, I mean, I don't really know where to start, but probably the highest highs and quite confidently to say the lowest lows, genuine. Last year was built up, as you know, because we spent a lot of time together in my build-up during my off-season, and it was all built up towards super sleep, like super heavyweight, coming out of a very, very successful junior bodybuilding season, and I didn't spend a lot of time in that season because I was right at the back end of it, so everything was gearing towards me breaking into that supers category and trying to do justice, I think, for myself. Like, I had high expectations, realistic as well. Like, I didn't want to know, but nobody coming out of a junior category in bodybuilding can step into supers territory and really take over, and that's just due to timing more than anything. But it didn't mean I wasn't going to go there and put up a fight for obviously my position. So I worked like a fucking dog. I was with Kuba for a year. I peaked at like 120 125 126 kilos, started with him at 100 off the back of I had a like blood poisoning. So when I went into him, like, my conditioning was fine. I was in good nick, but just a bit broken and worn. So rinsed off that fatigue, just pushed food, got super healthy, got super strong. Like, I was squatting 8 plates at your pre-core hack. Like, really, really strong, which is what I love to do. And then the tides changed and it was ready to start prepping. And I chose the Arnold to do it. I was like, right, if I'm going to do it, I might as well fucking do it big.
But you chose the hardest qualifier actually to start with. Like, that qualifier was fucking stacked, to be fair. Absolutely. Like, absolutely stacked. You know, you had guys who are, you know, I'm sure Andy Scott's won the universe, and I know Andy wasn't in the lineup, but you got guys that have just lost out to him, like people like Greg and and then you've got I always forget the guy's name, who's prepped by Josh Malley.
Josh Law.
Josh Law, and I really rate Josh's physique, actually. I think Josh got a fantastic physique. And you've got Big Nathan in the lineup as well. In that supers, Simon as well. Simon Booker was in the lineup as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, and so people forget that Simon's been like a top three at amateur Olympias and stuff. And these guys doing a regional, I think he came fourth, didn't he, in that region?
Yeah.
So that was a massive regional as well, actually, even before that. So sorry, man, carry on, bro.
Yeah, so, I mean, I live by the whole take a big bite and chew fucking harder. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the reality. So if I was going to do it, I was going to do it properly. And that was the motivation for that, was to really set a marker in the sand, like see where I actually sit with these guys. And then I've got something to build on, because otherwise, anybody can go to a lower level show. I mean, the reality was, like, that time in the season is always a tricky one, in my opinion. Like, from my experience, I think you're either going to be very, very busy, but knowing the Arnold's was the lead up, that last regional for Two Bros was always going to be pretty fucking big.
Yeah.
Apart from potentially bigger guys getting their qualification in earlier than season, then building into it. But yeah, the reality was that I wanted to see where I really sat. So I was like, fuck it, we're going to do the Arnold's. If we're going to do it, we're going to throw everything into it. So prep began. Went super smooth, and I'm not going to lie, after the graftism, I was shot. Like, I was probably, and for people who have back-to-back peaked, not, and I'm not even talking like on a weekly basis, I actually think personally that's easier. To come away from a good showing and have to continue to work for the best part of a month is difficult.
Yeah, I think that transition period of 1 week, 2 weeks is quite easy. The transition period of like 4 or 5 weeks is always fucking really hard, actually.
Yeah. And the reality was, like, I was on a high going into the graphtism. Everything ran super smooth because I had zero expectations. Like, it was all excitement. When I got to the graphtism, like, don't get me wrong, like, I backed myself 110%, and I think that I put on a very, very good show, and I beat some good guys. And it was questionable, and the people watching this may have a difference of opinion, but I think I was stood in top three, top four minimum. And I placed outside of top six, which was bizarre to me because I was stood next to the winner and second place, Craig and Josh. But then again, you've got to be realistic and say, okay, well, I may be fantastic from a presentation standpoint. I may have a fantastic structure and a great look, but these guys have got 10, 15, 20 kilos of muscle on me, or weight.
Yeah.
And they're fucking lean. So take that. So coming out of that, I was almost a bit like, right, I've got 4 weeks to dig and improve. That means I'm going to be lighter. That means I'm going to be smaller. It means I'm going to be leaner. Great. But I know where the line is now. So what's my motivation for killing myself even further? Do you know what I mean?
So that
4 weeks was just a constant head fucking. The problem is you're not in a position where you can logically think anyway. Like, you know, you're deprived from food, you've been dieting for 20 weeks. The reality is, like, nothing logical is coming out of your mind. And if it is, it's a percent or two. So I'm sat there, and I had big advice to everyone, right? If you ever come off the back of a show, stay on your shit. Do not take a day off. Do not take 2 days off, because once you've had that sweetness and that little bit of reality of, oh, well, this is what normal life is like, it's very, very hard to switch back on, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah,
Rob will know, because he deals with sort of the highest level of athletes making pros week in, week out. But he'll be having these conversations all the time. But for me, like, I'm a very, very simple guy. Like, me and Mads, we'll sit down in front of Netflix, order 50 quid with Nando's, and sit there on a Saturday night. So these little triggers are going off now. I'm sat there on a Saturday night with 3 weeks to go to the Arnold's, and I'm eating asparagus and chicken. Or I'm not even eating asparagus and chicken. I'm having a fucking protein shake. And I'm sat there and I'm like, I'm not really sure this is all. Like, what am I doing this for now? I know I've got that information. So it was a battle. But you know what? Like, I stuck it out with all the shit that happened. Like, Mads got rushed into hospital the week before the Arnold's. That was touch and go whether she'd even make it up there. Like, that girl, all of you will know if you know me on a relatively personal basis, that girl is like my left arm. Like, she's not around. Like, we do everything together. So for her to think that she wouldn't even make it to the Arnold's, like, to be able to come with me was hard during peak week. Like, if there's anything you don't want, like, you don't want all that sort of shit. You want it to run smoother. So got to the Arnold's, and then I beat, and I'm happy to say this, and I'll say it, I couldn't give a fuck. I beat my main man, Nathan Stiles. That was my main thing. Like, I was like, because I bantered him all prep. I saw him in Ultraflex, literally week in, week out, eating his Cocoa Pops post-workout. And I said, Nate, if you're going to stand next to me, bro, do not eat any more Cocoa Pops, because that waste ain't going to do you any favours. And so it was good. He beat me in the graphtism. So I got a one-up on him in the Arnold's. But wicked, amazing experience. For anyone that saw it, the biggest and best stage I've ever stood on, and probably the UK scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said last week on the podcast, apart from the Olympia, it's the biggest stage I've ever seen. And I've travelled all over the world for shows.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to the Arnold's US, I've been to the New York Pros, I've been to the pro shows out in Europe. And apart from the Olympia, that's the biggest stage I've ever seen. Well, to be honest, in terms of actually span, it's probably bigger than the Olympia stage, but in terms of audience, like, yeah, I've never seen anything like it in the UK. Unbelievable.
It was incredible. Not quite as ruthless as the ones that you tell me about, though. Apparently, they shout all sorts of shit at you in America, don't they?
Mate, is that when I was at mate when I was out in New York, obviously New York was my first ever American show, and New York is ruthless anyway. Like, you know, like there's stories obviously when Dorian went out there and did his first show, and you know they booed the American that won because they thought Dorian should have won and stuff like that. Like, when I was out in New York, there was a 212 guy that come out who I can't remember who it was, but he got the first call out. The guy next to me was literally shouting, "You're fucking shit!" Like, you know, like number 75, "You're fucking shit. Get out of that call out." Did it? No one batted an eyelid. It was like everyone would see that every day, and yeah. You know, they are fucking ruthless. To be fair, man, out there, like they just
you don't get that here at all, do you?
Well, you can't even. Like call your fucking client's number because that's fucking someone says I's corrupt. It's
yeah, 100%. Yes, 62. Tighter. Stay tight through the glutes. It's like shut the fuck up, Mark Dane.
Yeah, it's fucking ruthless out there, man. I tell you. But no, it was a great stage, man. It was a great day, like a great weekend. And I've just think they're making it bigger this year. They're going to spread it across 3 days. Like, yep. And that would maybe be my only critique of the Arnolds is that. Some of the guys and girls felt a little rushed just because obviously it was all on one day. You had so many competitors, which again, sometimes you can't account for. Sometimes you can't account for 50 people registering on the day. And so obviously they rectify it this year. They do advanced registration. They've done it over 3 days. So I think it's only going to be an even better experience, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the quality of athletes are going to be better as well. Like when you get to go out abroad, as you know, but obviously I did the amateur row in Alicante as a junior. And to go out there, it's just like, right, you're really seeing what this pond's like now. Like, you're seeing how big you... doesn't matter whether you win overalls at PCA or even two bros in the UK sometimes, depending on who turns up. Yeah, like, yeah. When you go out to these international shows, like, you really see where the talent is, and you realize that there's some big, big guys out there and girls, like amazing athletes. And that I think was a very, very big wake up call to think, Jesus, like there's going to be some good guys coming to the UK now. I'm not going to have to get on a plane now because they're going to come to me. Yeah. So if you're going to be standing on stage, and I think we saw that quite a lot with Two Bros as well. Like that, I want to say it was Ukrainian who won the Supers. Connor, Joe Ballinger was it in the British?
Oh, the Italian guy. Yeah.
And you think you look at that and you think, right, okay, well they're coming over here now. This isn't just a pool of the UK scene. Everyone knows each other from Instagram. Great, we're all best mates. Like these guys are going to come over. They don't give a shit who you are. They don't give a shit who your mates with. They don't give a shit if you train with them or not. They're going to come over. They're going to take your pro card. So turn up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well. I don't know who I was speaking to the other day, but I said to somebody that there was only one UK bodybuilder all year that won a pro card outside of the UK, which was Rob Cannon.
Yeah.
You got to think how many bodybuilders travelled for shows this year and one bodybuilder outside of the UK got a card.
Yeah.
And that's some really good bodybuilders. You know, that's some really good bodybuilders. Josh travelled, Josh Law travelled, Nathan travelled.
Yeah.
I think Andy Scott might have travelled as well. Maybe he didn't, but you got these guys who are fucking epic bodybuilders. And they're not getting a nod. And like Joe Ballinger travelled a lot. Like, what's his name? I always forget. Oscar got a card in Finland. But that's a Two Bros affiliated show. So outside of the Two Bros shows, you know, you've only got Rob Cannon who took a card. And again, I don't actually think he won the overall. I think he got like...
I think he came second.
Yeah,
second,
yeah.
So, top three, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think he might have been second or third in the overall. So yeah, like the standard of these international shows is unbelievable. And yeah, like you say, like these shows are now, like the Ben Weider in a few weeks' time, I think it's only 5 weeks' time, it's probably going to be an easier pro qualifier because it's at the beginning of the year, but it's definitely not going to be fucking easy, I'll tell you
that. Not at all.
Yeah, no, it's going to be...
The thing is, like, people, athletes get better, coaches get better. I said this, I think it was after, like, the first-timer show for PCA, and it was absolutely rammed because it kept getting pushed back. Do you remember? Anyone who was there. And I came back and me and Mads were having a conversation in the car about it. And we were like, do you know what? Like the quality of athletes and these first timers show is silly, but the quality of athletes are as a result of the quality of coaching. Do you know what I mean? And it revolves around. So it's like with anything. I mean, I saw it a lot in rugby towards the back end of my career when I was playing, and these guys were coming through and they were like 4 years younger than me, and they were bigger than me, they were stronger than me, they were faster than me and more skilled than me. And it's just that evolution of the game consistently. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see. And I think what is positive is that level of education is showing more longevity.
Yeah, for sure. Well, a prime example was the guy I prepped for the first time, is one of the first times, Adam, went on to win the British finals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He'd done three shows. He'd done first time as he won that. He'd done PCA London, which is a big show, won that. And then went on to do the PCA finals against some really top boys and won that as well. And one of the guys that was in it, this is how good that lineup was, that one of the guys who was in that PCA finals didn't place, went to a show a week after and then won a pro qualifying event. Didn't win the pro card, but won his class at a pro qualifying event. Yeah. And he didn't even place at the finals. Like, so yeah, like these first timers, they're crazy, man. And again, like there's another first timer show now, probably when people listen to this, probably three or four weeks from now. Like,
yeah.
Like I think I've only got one girl doing that show, but this is somebody who you look at and you would think, nah, she's nowhere first timer. She poses well. She's got tight midsection. She carries a decent amount of muscle. Like, you know, these are people that, you know, first time, and you have this impression of somebody skinny who's not really posing well and looks awkward on stage. But, you know, like you say, like not only the knowledge of coaches, the better coaches, the more evolution of athletes, the more evolution of training, like people like these first timers now, they're no joke, man. They're absolutely no joke, like you say.
It's nice to have that guidance straight off the bat. I mean, it would have been the same with yourself, but for me, training out my mum and dad's stable, Argos set up, I know we laugh about it with the whole lockdown thing, but like it's trial and error. So trial and error. It's just like you read something in Muscle and Fitness and it's like GVT is the one. So you do GVT for 6 months, but you actually don't diet properly. You don't have a fucking clue what you're doing. So you don't make any gains. It's just like, all right, okay, well, I'll go on bodybuilding.com and look at what Steve Cook's doing. And he's big man on campus. I was having a laugh with somebody in the gym about it the other week. And it's just like, it's nonsense. But now, I think power of social media, I suppose, people are getting onto it very, very quickly. They're not spending 2-3 years of their developmental years just trying. They're straight on the train and then they're flying.
Yeah. I remember training when I first started training. I was 16. I used to train chest every day.
Yeah.
So if I didn't train chest every day, then I wouldn't get any muscle there.
Do you know what? I'm pissed, mate, because I trained arms every day and I still got shit arms. So that was a fucking 3-4 years wasted.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But like you say, there's an evolution of everything, knowledge. You know, and there's been some coaches who I think have been on the forefront of that and really pushing that side of things, which is great. You know, and it is really, really useful. It's really, really useful to have. So yeah, let's fast forward, man. Like, obviously, you opened up your little client gym as well, which is good, man. And obviously, yep. I've seen you get things rolling down there. What sort of things did you face to open that? Like, what, obviously, apart from the pump truck issue, like getting a pump truck, but you know, what sort of issues did you have?
It's the new and old generation. Units are ran by property portfolio specialists who are all 80 plus years old. And when you say to them, I'm an online coach and I earn this much money and I do this and I've got this many clients and this is how far my business is going to go, they say, yeah, but you're not a carpenter. And I'm like, what the fuck? So it took me over a year to actually be able to sit in front of a landlord genuinely and pitch him and say, listen, like, we can do this. Just give me a chance. So really, it was just about that vision, I suppose. I think I probably would call it vision. And the belief and the fact that I've got a mortgage and I can put my house up against it. Like if I don't pay your fucking rent every month, mate, come and take my sofas. Like, you know where I live. But I remember us having a conversation about it and that time it takes communicating. Agents aren't fantastic. Do you know what I mean? So the sooner you can get hold of a landlord, the better. But we, like, it was all right. After going and viewing a number of places, you've got a very successful gym anyway. So moving over to Herne Bay, you had proof. Do you know what I mean? Mate, I know what I'm fucking doing. Like, I don't need to have this conversation with you. I don't need to justify what I'm doing. But for me, I think, and me and Mads, when we were going and viewing these places originally, we didn't really know what we were We just knew we wanted a space. We didn't know about uses, about applications to the council, about changing the use of the space, et cetera, et cetera. And we knew we wanted a unit. Obviously, we couldn't have an office space. Like, we needed something that was going to be able to take a gym or a fit out.
Yeah.
So we're going and viewing these places, and they're like, so what do you do for work? And we're like, oh, we're online coaches. And they're like, all right, okay, so no, because you don't even fit the use of the space. Luckily, for anyone that's interested, the council, a lot of the councils now have changed, reorganized the uses, so you can actually operate a gym under retail use, which is good. I think it's like category D or something, category E, yeah. But yeah, I think it was just trial and error, pitches after pitches, and trying to say the right thing, and people not really being interested, and then agents not really wanting to have that difficult conversation with their client, who is the landlord. We went and actually met a landlord and at his space, and we told him about everything. He was just, oh, that sounds like a really profitable business, because it is. Like, if you're a good coach, you can do very, very well. Sounds like a fucking dream. What, sit on your laptop in your pants all day and just chat people in, banging. But again, like, we came away and he just wasn't straight, because it doesn't have Corey Fieldhouse car mechanic above it. Do you know what I mean? So honestly, like, that was our biggest hurdle, just getting our foot in the door. But funny, I spoke to the landlord this morning, and he's at his business, talking him through things, just chit chatting. He don't have a fucking clue what I do, really. But he's really happy. Do you know what I mean? So,
no, it's hard, man. Even trying to find a second location for LRF, like, you know, and that's an established gym in a massive unit, you know what I mean? And in a busy area, like, people don't really know where Ashford is or what Ashford is. They probably only know it for LRF. But
100%. They wear your hoodies more than they wear their own clothes, mate.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad. Yeah.
They do.
So Ashford is the hub of Kent. For those who don't know, like, Kent is a big place, and Ashford is, you know, really the hub of Kent. And, you know, to have a gym in such a big area, and then trying to find another location, when you tell people, oh, we're going to open a gym, they just instantly it's no. And the thing is, I'm looking for another location now, and when I'm making these phone calls, it very much is like, nah, like, we're all right, we'll look for something else. Like, you know, and they just, yeah, I don't know why, but it's just maybe, like you say, that old school mentality of, you know, a gym's going to smash the place up and it's going to make it look fucking awful. And like, the biggest issue that we always come up with is parking. So, yeah. like landlords will think, well, because the thing is, the two gyms combined have over 1,100 members. Like, they in their mind think, well, 1,100 people are going to turn up at once. You know what I mean? That's what they think. You know? It's going to be carnage, and there's going to be roadblocks. When in reality, like, at Ashford, we have 15 parking spaces, and very rarely are any of, like, they're all used. Only, like, of an evening at, like, 6 o'clock on a Monday.
Yeah.
But not yesterday, because it was Valentine's Day. But yeah. You know, 6 o'clock on a Monday is busy, yeah. And there are a couple of cars on the road, but again, there's no yellow lines there, so that's fine. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
We have an agreement with the local businesses that are next to us that we'll park in there when it's busy after 6 o'clock, of course. So, but these are all things that you can't have a conversation with about, you know, to a landlord. So, yeah, it's always really, really hard to to find a space, and I think that's probably one of the hardest things to do, is to find a decent location, because you are always hit with roadblocks.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I said, it took 3 years actually to find a second location. It took a year from agreement to actually getting a lease in place and getting something sorted. Like, you know, so in reality, it took 4 years to find a second unit. And I was looking quite actively once or twice a week, you know. And the reason people might think, well, that's not a lot to look, but properties don't come up every day. Like, warehouses don't come up every day. So there's no point in looking every day, because all you do is just keep repeating the same thing. And again, if you did look every day and something did come up every day, it takes 3 or 4 days then to book a viewing. So they're booking more viewings in on that time as well. So yeah, I was actively looking during that time. And say it took me 3 years to find it, and then a year to actually get a deal on it as well. So
I remember when you first went to view it, and I was at the gym and you showed me the video of it. Mm-hmm. And that was a year from when you showed me. Pretty much a year. But no, you're right. It's for me, like, I'm quite sentimental. Like, I wear my heart on my sleeve. So if I'm in a position where I can talk to somebody about the vision of raw coaching, it's just like, yeah, I've got this plan, this I want to do. They go, no. I'm like, you fucking bastard. Like, are you sure? You know what I mean? Like, I take his heart. They don't care. Like, they're not interested. They just want their rent. And that's the reality. But getting your foot in the door is difficult. And that's just for a private space. Like, I can't imagine the amount of red tape or conversations and planning, managing that's got to go on. And there's also the agreements, aren't there? Like, we've talked before about rent-free periods and all this sort of stuff. I remember you talking to me about bins. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You got your bins sorted. Otherwise, you're not going to have anywhere to fucking put them. So it's just all these things that I think, naively, I think that's probably the best thing. Like, when you first started, I think LRF was probably like your mecca, wasn't it? Like, LRF and Ashford was your main. So you probably had a bit of a sense of naivety, which gives you that little bit of excitement. So things don't hit you quite as hard. But when you've got a gym and it's as successful as it is, which it is, going to Herne Bay and setting that up, you would have probably been maybe psychologically a little bit more impatient, in the sense of, mate, I know what I'm fucking doing. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Let's just get this space sorted. I'm sick of having these conversations now. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's get moving.
I mean, and the thing is, it's not just the gym, as always happened. Like, at the moment, like, I'm probably the busiest I've ever been at the moment. And I'm just talking. So we've just employed a new agency to take care of the social media for Complete Strength. And I'm not talking about, like, posting. I'm talking about, like, ads, SEO, website optimization and stuff like that. Not just, like, search engine optimization, but actually looking at the website.
Yeah.
And I looked at the website and, like the frustration grows when I don't know what's going on. And like you say, like, with these landlords, you send them a proposal, takes 3 or 4 days for them to get back to you. During that time, you're scratching your head and thinking, I'll tell you what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, this is going to be a great success. I'm going to have this bit of equipment here. I'm going to have this bit of equipment there. That's exactly what you're thinking. Yeah. Then you fucking open up your emails on a Friday and the person says, it's not for me. And then all them fucking exciting thoughts that you've had has literally just gone out the window.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the same at the moment with Complete Strength. Like, we've taken on this this social company who seem to be really good, to be fair. I just had a chat with them earlier. They're on the ball. But, for example, like, I will action things straight away. We got off this call, for example, and she said, well, I need a lift of these products and da 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 da. And I said, cool, I'll do it as soon as we get off the call. And she said to me, well, we won't be able to look at that for another 2 or 3 days. So, like, if you can obviously send that to us, that's great. But it's because obviously we only have this one sole vision, like you say, like, we have this one sole goal and this one sole vision. Where these like, agencies and where these landlords, they have, you know, 10 or 12 different projects going on at once. So they can only dedicate part of their time to you and to your project. And that's one of the most frustrating things as well. Same as, like, when you're trying to book in builders and painters and shit like that. Like, I'm trying to book you in for tomorrow, but you're telling me you ain't got a space for 3 weeks. And, like, the frustration grows there. But, you know, I'll be honest, you don't ever get over that frustration. It's still sat there, no matter how many times you do it. You just learn to deal with it a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think talking about builders, like, we had, like, I'm quite straight up. So again, going viewing these places, my builders who did my kitchen downstairs or my whole downstairs, we moved in here. Like, I called 3 people, right? And I said, listen, I said, I'm not ringing around for a quote. I need this doing. You can have the work, just come and do it. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not interested in bartering with you. You're not going to give me a quote and I'll call you back in 6 months. I need this doing now. Mm-hmm. Like, so when I'm going and viewing these units, I'm like, listen, and it, look, I hate, oh, so when do you think you'd like to move in? Yesterday. Hence why I'm here. Do you know what I mean? What you think I'm forward planning a year? Oh yeah, no worries. Let me just get the money together and then I'll give you a ring. Do you know what I mean? Like, take action now. And I think from a business perspective, and you can tell me this for a fact, like, you don't get to where you are by sitting and thinking about ideas. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to action that shit. So I think, what was your first product for Complete Strength? Pre-workout, wasn't it?
Pre-workout.
So when you first made the idea of doing a pre-workout, all right, bar knowing the industry yourself because you're a bodybuilder, bar knowing the ingredients you want, like, you didn't sit there and draw the label, did you? Do you know what I mean? Like, you started going out and looking for ways that you can make the pre-workout, right?
Yeah, and the thing is that even with that, like I like you, I will jump in at the deep end, but I'll jump in at the deep end like knowing that I've got a little bit of nous behind me. Like, for example, if somebody comes to me and said, I want to fucking build an iPhone and this is what it's going to look like, I'd be like, I've got no fucking idea, mate. You know what I mean? Because it's not my thing. But if someone says to me, listen, Rob, I want to create a new product with this and that and in the bodybuilding industry, then I could look at it, you know, and say, well, actually, I think it's going to work or I think it's not going to work. So I will jump into things where I know that I've got a good chance of succeeding. And like with the gym, I knew I had a good chance of succeeding. Even if, for example, like the gym fouled, like, yeah, I would lose money. But again, like you'll know me and other people know me, I'm not money driven. I've got enough money and that's all I need. But also in the same breath, if I lost everything tomorrow, I'd still be Rob. I don't fucking have to. I haven't got Rolexes to sell. I ain't got Lamborghinis to sell. You know what I mean? I drive a fucking Nissan and I wear a fake Apple Watch. I'm not worried about
Bora ring on.
I'm not worried about that side of things. So like, yes, I could potentially lose money. And I think that's where people go wrong sometimes, is that they're so scared of losing things that have been built up. And yes, it's not nice to lose money, but like the first, again, this was my point, the first pre-workout that we made, you know, never actually got released. It was fucking awful. It was fucking terrible. It cost me about $7,000. And all the ingredients were the same and everything was right, but they just didn't flavor it right. So they sent us out some samples. I was like, man, that's banging. I said, make that. And then when they made it wrong. And everything then had to be turned around. And then we had to then find another manufacturer and another this and another that. And, you know, if you don't fucking go in with something, say, well, you know what? Like, I've got an idea of what it's going to look like. I want to get this going. I want to get it moving. Let's get some bits together. Let's see how it happens. And you know what? The worst case scenario is I fucking foul. You know what I mean? And again, just even like, for example, like with the house as a deposit, like if you foul, I know you'll go out and get a job in a week, regardless if it's fucking cleaning dustbins or fucking packing shelves at Sainsbury's. I'll go out and get a job in another week and I'll start again. Like, you ain't going to go hungry. You ain't going to fucking live on the streets. You ain't going to be starving. You know what I mean? You'll find a way to go and get whatever it is you've got already, if not even better, because you've learned from your mistakes of the past.
100%. I think there's something to be said for being at rock bottom and knowing that that's the furthest you can fall. So what's it fucking matter? Do you know what I mean? Like, all right, I am in the worst possible place. And listen, like, I've been there, you've been there. And I really have thought, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? But then that reminder of, well, do you know what? Like, I don't actually see anything getting worse. So maybe now I'll start to push on. I can stop feeling sorry for myself and stop licking my wounds. Like, yes, a couple of shit things have happened on the fucking bounce, but now we'll start getting back to work. And mate, I've been there. Like, we've had conversations before where I've been getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to supervisor security shift at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm having to get a bus to a train station, then get a bus and then walk the last 15 minutes, like a 2-hour commute at 4 o'clock in the morning. Nobody wants to do that. Going to work in the dark, going home in the dark, it's shit. But do you know what? Like, who fucking cares? And nobody really does. Do you know what I mean? So you can sit there in pity, but nobody's gonna change what their thoughts are. So you just gotta do your thing. Do you know what I mean?
If you really want something, you'll find a way. Like, for example, the pre-workout. Like when we first had that pre-workout, it would have been the easy route to say, oh man, this ain't gonna work. Like, you know what I mean? I've used a local manufacturer, I've lost $7,000 or $8,000. Like, this supplement game ain't for me, and turn it around. You know, 18 months later, the business does £500,000 a year, you know, all because I was like, well, you know what? Like, I'll just find somebody else. I'll just find somebody else. You know, rather than me wait 3 years to find another location, I'll say, oh, well, you know what? Like, we ain't never going to find another location. And then Herne Bay would never have opened. The easy route's always there, but the easy route is really a lot of times just a pussy out. Like, you just,
it's a comfort blanket, I think, as well. Like, you and I'm going through this with raw coaching at the moment. I'm like, right, okay, well, I'm in a position where, like, I'm all right. Do you know what I mean? I'm all right. I'm cool. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can probably sit on the amount of clients that I can, probably flick up every now and again, maybe some drop off as they do, as is normal. And I'm cool. But fuck that. You know what I mean? Like, because if I ain't going to put my back against the wall, nothing's going to move forward. And those like, and you realize you sort of, you just scale up every time. And it's not like you go from earning 2 grand a month to 2.5 grand a month. Like, you're going from earning 2 grand a month to 5 grand a month. But that gap is the fucking effort. And like tired nights, tired mornings, sitting there grinding it out, having shit conversations with people, thinking you're getting nowhere. But I don't know, like, I think I mentioned it to you, but I'm like, I'm banging on these secrets books at the moment, like thoughts become things. And it's so true. And I saw a video on Instagram yesterday, I think it was, I forgot her name, J-Lo. And who's that black woman in America? Oprah. They were sat there and they were talking about affirmations. And you're probably talking about, like, well, Oprah, number one, but I don't know, it wasn't J-Lo, I can't remember who it was. Anyway, but she was saying, like, thoughts become things. Like, every morning I wake up and I do my affirmations still. And you think, this is a woman who's fucking doing bits, you know what I mean? Like, she ain't worrying about where her next meal's coming from. She's thinking about where she's going all day tomorrow.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? But she's not, because she's like, I want to do more and I can do more, but you don't get there by not fucking cracking on. Do you know what I mean?
100%, man. And it's one of the reasons that I don't know if you know this story, but there's a few people who know this story. So when I was living in King's Hill, so you come to King's Hill, it's a fucking lovely area, man. Like, it's a banging area, like probably the nicest, like if not the nicest, but one of the nice areas in the southeast. Like, it's a fucking affluent area. Everybody's got Range Rover, everybody's got fucking this and that. And at the time I was driving a Range Rover, a new Range Rover, like off the shelf, nice, good house, da 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 da. And I became very comfortable. I became really comfortable. And I actually bought a 2003 Renault Clio.
Yeah.
I bought it for like £700, mate. And I was like, the Range Rover is going to stay parked on the drive until I fucking bring my act together. And I drove that Nissan Clio for about 6 months.
Yeah.
Just because I wanted to pull myself back in a little bit. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm becoming a little bit like the person I don't want to be. Like, I was starting to wake up a little bit late. I was starting to slow down on my responses to clients. My 12-hour reply time would turn to 18. And, you know, I've never ever backed off like the gym and stuff like that. Like, I'm always still on time for the gym and stuff like that. Yeah. But my personal training was a little bit shit as well. Like, my personal training worked good as well. And it was one of the things I actually did to pull myself back in. So I said, well, the Range Rover is going to stay there. Financially, I'm fine. Like, I don't need to worry about that. Like, the money's coming in. But on a day-to-day basis, I need to pull myself back a little bit. And one of the ways I did that is I stopped driving such a nice car. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna drive around in this shit car. Because the thing is, when you pull up to a petrol station in a Range Rover and it's new and it's shiny, everyone looks, you know what I mean?
There's a higher esteem, isn't there? Like, you probably carry yourself differently. And because you know, they know.
Yeah, for sure. And I wanted to get rid of that. And that's one of the reasons that I fucked it off. And I actually bought a 20-year-old like Renault Clio that leaked, had a fucking leak in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because I had to downgrade myself a little bit. And same as also why I wanted to get back into shape this year, because my knife was very blunt in that area of my life. Like, my knife was very blunt. Like, this year, like, I've got no issues now with work. I've got no issues now with that, you know, do handsomely in terms of a financial reward from the coaching or from the gyms or from Complete Strength. But I wasn't happy in the part of my life that was my physique. You know, I'd wake up like, and at this, I just started dieting in like November. So in and around about Christmas. And like, I was pretty on it and I got reasonably lean for a mini diet. And I was like, you know what, I'll grow back out. But the reason I did it is because I was real slack in that area of my life. And I was like, and like you say, like, it was probably the worst I'd ever looked like in like 10 or 15 years of bodybuilding. And I was at the bottom. I was like, you know what, I just got to fucking get myself up and do something about this. And obviously that's when I started following a new diet and a new training regime. And it wasn't perfect to start. There was obviously still cheat meals of a weekend and slip ups here and there. But it was something which was almost new to me because I hadn't done it for fucking 7-8 years. But now it is routine. Now it is routine that I wake up, I do my steps, I get my cardio in, I walk the dog, and then I've set a new standard for myself. So yeah, like you say, you know, when you are up against it, like, it's important that you fucking say, you know what, like, you recognize that, you know what, I'm a bit shit in that area. Like, I need to be better in that area. And then you just act accordingly towards it. Yeah.
100%. 100%. No. So yeah. So the HQ is up and running. I'm still buying kit. The thing is, I wanted to be in a position. My original motivation was to just have my own space. And then obviously I understood that the greatest respect, like call a spade, like you could, I can monetize that. Like it's part of my business. If it's Raw HQ and it's Raw headquarters, like why wouldn't my clients come down? And not only that, I'm in a position, and I know you'll appreciate this. You don't have to ask for permission. Like you don't have to do anything. If I want a client to come down and they're 2 weeks out from a show and they want to strip off in the middle of the gym and do their posing, you do that. Do you know what I mean? Because it's my space, and that's something that I'm able to almost like give back to the clients, but it pays me dividends, not just financially, or not really financially at all, but psychologically, I feel accomplished. Like I've gone from working with yourself originally to even build Raw coaching through your coaching course. Hit the link below. he didn't pay me to say that as well. But like I've gone from that, and like my brand is growing and will continue to grow. But it's just like, well, this is something that, in all fairness, due to my commitment and my clients giving me that commitment back, I'm now able to build. So it's been super rewarding. But obviously, as the saying goes, like once you've got something, it's like, what's next?
Yeah.
And I'm already like, fucking hell, I'm going to have to ask Rob for 500 grand so I can build a mecha Raw HQ.
it's the thing, man, that people just find excuses, mate. People just find excuses to certain things, like the roadblocks that are put in the way. And, you know, when people, as I said, like they approach that landlord and they get turned away, and then they get turned away, and they get turned away. And, you know, for example, like the supplements, like when I first approached the manufacturer, they fucking done it wrong. And, you know, and rather than say, oh, man, this ain't for me, like I just found another manufacturer and they were a lot better. And I'm not saying a working relationship is great with them. It's okay. But again, like, you know, if they hit me with a roadblock, then I'll find something else. I'll find another way. And that's the most important thing, is that you find another way.
The most important thing around that is actually learning. Again, no such thing as failures, lessons and all that, but it's very, very true. Like every time you have a shit situation, you're in a position where you can manage that situation so much better. There's always responsibility on both sides. I find, like, okay, I'm going to these agents, for example, and I'm like, yeah, I'm an online coach. Like, don't get me wrong, I didn't go in there and tell them that I was a car mechanic, but I managed that so much differently. And I realized that, well, do you know what? You as an agent aren't really that helpful, or agents as in general aren't really that helpful. Yes, cool, you're going to let me the property, but I want to speak to the landlord, because there's no point in wasting my time. There's no point in wasting your time or the landlord's time. So let's just change that. And what's it? It means that everything's just a little bit more efficient, and you get the answer potentially you don't want, but at least you get an answer sooner.
Yeah.
Decide what you're doing. You don't get overexcited and then somebody tell you your idea is shit and you have to brick their fucking house or something.
It's hard, man. Like that first gym was real hard, but like you say, like the second gym actually was a piece of piss. Like building a second gym, which is aesthetically a lot better than the first gym. Like I still train at Ashford because I love that hardcore feeling.
Yeah.
But aesthetically, it's a lot better. It's got a lot more moving parts. There's a mezzanine floor. There's a big reception rather than a small reception. Yeah. You know, there are bits of equipment that came from all over the world, from Atlantis, which is Canada, if you don't know, and Prime, which is US, and Gymshop, which is Ireland. Whereas when I first built LRF, it was just Hammer Strength and Precore, which all actually have a hub in the UK. So there was a lot more moving parts to the second gym, but it was a fucking lot easier because I learned from the mistakes that I made in the first gym. And yeah, like you say, it is very much like when you do hear a no, or when something does fuck up, like that, you have to pull the lessons from it, because if you don't pull a lesson from it, I guarantee you'll make the same mistake again, and then you make the same mistake again, and that will just lead to just straight frustration on your part, and the people who make those mistakes generally then blame everybody else. But what they don't realize is that they're not looking at themselves and rectifying the mistake and then saying, oh, how can I actually do this differently, rather than, oh fuck, this person is a cunt or whatever, you know.
So, yeah. Wanker.
Yeah, that's what they think. Yeah, but no, that's great, man. Like, yeah, it's really, really useful to find out where you're at and what you're doing, because obviously, hopefully, we'll be jumping on a few more podcasts together as well.
Yeah.
Have you got many people in these first shows? Have you?
I've got three going to the first timers in PCA. I've got more guys competing sort of middle to the end of the year already. But I wanted to be in that position. Like the guys that I've got competing already this year, earlier on in the season, are guys that were in their progression phase last year. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to... Last year was a great experience for me from a coaching perspective, because I'd never been to an actual show with a number of athletes and had to really find my feet. And the reality is, like the likes of yourself, Tom, Cal, Jace, all these boys, like you've been doing this a long time. You've got a good amount of experience, and you're treading into quite a deep puddle, I believe, I felt. And the expectations there, obviously, like we're friends, I'm friends with Jace. I know you guys personally. Doesn't mean I want to come away with anything less than a fucking first, and I want my guys to beat your guys. Like, so as from a brand perspective, I was very, very much in the position where anyone who wants to compete under the Raw Coaching brand now has to follow. I'm not doing these quick shotgun preps. Don't message me 8 weeks out from a show and say that you want to get in shape, because it puts me under a lot of pressure, which means it puts you under a lot of pressure. And the reality is you're probably not ready if you need an 8 week prep. So that for me coming into this season and this year, I'm not as busy, I'll be honest. But do you know what? I feel more confident with the guys I'm taking.
But prep is the, everyone wants to be a prep coach, but people don't realize it's fucking hard to break into. Like you say, like there is a crop of probably, I would say between, depending how you look at it, like there's a crop of anywhere between sort of 4 to 8 coaches who, I'll be honest, who probably have 90% of the clients, 80 to 90% of the clients. And you're wondering why these guys and some girls are constantly winning shows is because they have the majority of the clients. The reason that you could probably, again, name 5 coaches who get 80% of the wins is because they've got 80% of the clients. So, you know, you go into these shows and, you know, like I said, I've got a first-timer going into this bikini show in the PCA who doesn't look like a first-timer. But that's the market that I'm going to attract. And when you have other coaches who are not inexperienced in terms of the fact that they've not been coaching for as long, but maybe they've not been, you know, working as closely within the industry as long, you're going to attract that type of client who might, for example, my first time, I might have had 6 years of training under a belt, where your first time might only had 18 months. Yep. So naturally, they're going to carry more muscle. It doesn't mean naturally that I've got that person in that position to build all that muscle and look great on stage. It just means they've come to me with a lot more experience, a lot more knowledge, and said, you know what? Now it's time to dip my toe into the water because I've done all this training. But again, other people will have other clients come to them who don't have almost that resume under their belt already. Yeah. And people wonder why do LRF win so many shows, or why does Team Jace win so many shows, or why does Cal or Tom win so many shows? It's because they've got the majority of the clients in those shows. And also, too, it's the fact that the quality of client that comes to these people is, generally speaking, not always the case, but generally speaking, a little bit of a higher quality of client. Again, not meaning that to disrespect anyone, but it just means that the people approaching these guys and girls can see the results that they get and think, I want a piece of that, rather than I want to try a show.
Yes, and that is the thing. And I think it just goes back to managing expectations. Like, I love being a prep coach for competitions, but the workload is far, far, far greater than working with gen pop clients who, do you know what, need less babysitting. Like all these supersonic athletes that everyone's got a hold of, they're drama queens. Like, but they pay a lot of money for that as well. So again, if you're paying £200-300 for a coach, like, you're fucking bleeding them. Most of the time as an athlete, why is this happening? Why is that happening? Oh my God. Like, you haven't replied to me in 2 minutes. What am I going to do? I'm not going to be able to breathe. And they're prima donnas. They are. I'm a prima donna. Like, the reality is, like, if I'm prepping for a show, like, I want to make sure I'm doing everything right. I'm probably not as bad as some people, but the reality is, like, competitive clients have got big egos. They have, like, they've got to, because they've got to feel themselves, put themselves in front of hundreds of people in a little pair of pants and fake tan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah.
So moving forward, that was the big thing for me. It's not a numbers game. And again, I respect you guys and what you do. And I'm just staying in my own lane, focusing on my clients and making sure that I bring the best them possible and make sure that they're competitive. And that's all we can do. Do you know what I mean?
Man, that is generally what you've got to do, man. Just stay in your lane and, you know, like you say, manage expectations. When a client does look great, you tell them, man, you look fucking great and you're going to be hard to beat. And if a client is slightly off, then you tell them, listen, you're not sharp, you're not going to be as sharp as these other guys and girls, but listen, let's do what we can, let's bring the best that we can and we'll go.
I think there was a massive thing last year, again, talking about muscle, etc., with first timers going and just not having as much muscle as these guys. Adam, your boy, was fucking brilliant. Like, had a big, big full shoulders, massive full chest, lovely back, big arms. Do you know what I mean? Like, looked the part. He was ready to go. He's ready to rock and roll. Nobody was standing next to him, really. And then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum, first timers, who are very much like, I've been training a year. I want to see what this is about. So if you're taking them, and you're prepping these guys, which is absolutely great because everyone deserves a shot of the trophy. You just got to manage your expectations and be like, listen, these boys have been doing this for a long time. Don't misinterpret the first timers because it means fuck all, in my opinion. Anyway, I thought last year's quality of athletes was insane.
It will, and mate, it's only going to get better.
I'm excited.
Yeah, are you going to that show? Are you?
Yes. Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, I'll be there as well, man. We'll catch up anyway. We'll catch up before then, but yeah, we'll have a coffee.
Yeah, 100%, man.
That's what people do.
Yeah, kiss and cuddle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, perfect. No, awesome, man. Thanks for joining me, bro. We will catch up again. And as I said, I'm going to try and get Corey on a bit more regularly to talk about some bodybuilding topics. And as the season kicks off, obviously, it will give us more and more to talk about. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. But, Corey, thanks ever so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
No problemo. Much love, brother. See you later.
Take care, mate. Thank you.